Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The vote at Amazon is in. A win in New York, still up in the air in Alabama. The jobless rate down to 3.6% with a nice gain in manufacturing jobs. And today on the show, the labor machines in two right-to-work states, North Carolina and Florida. Welcome to the Monday, April 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a growing number of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in about 10, 15 minutes with Herb Harton. And Herb is the head of the Southeastern North Carolina Central Labor Council. He's also involved in the North Carolina Democratic Party. Interesting history, going back to the late 60s. He didn't go to college. He was drafted to go to Vietnam. Served in Nam in 68, 69, and while in the Army, he pursued learning photography. And when he came home, which was at the end of 69 going into 70, he found himself working in the motion picture industry in Charlotte. 1985, he was asked to come to Wilmington, North Carolina, to work in his first feature film. Ended up staying there, going from project to project. Then in 1988, he links up with a business agent, joined a union that would be IATSE, the International Association of Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 600. Now he's completing 33 years there. He is a North Carolina State Regional Steward and Political Director for Local 600. Also, Herb is one of the six presidentially appointed members of the Local 600 Election Committee, where he is one of the two reps from the Eastern region. That committee supervises the election process for the Guild, which is pretty complicated. He is president of the Southeastern North Carolina Central Labor Council. It is the local arm of the state AFL-CIO, and they have 11 affiliated unions in five counties that send representatives to the council. And last year, Herb was elected to be the state president of the North Carolina Democratic Party Labor Caucus. And he says when he took it over, it was barely functioning, and apparently now it's doing really, really well. We'll talk about that. He's also a board member of the North Carolina of Retired Americans. And North Carolina, by the way, has 60,000 retired members of that alliance, and you know they are politically active. One of the issues he's going to talk about, and he's done several speeches on the necessity of lowering prescription drug prices and expanding Medicaid. They have not done that in North Carolina. A lot of states did not follow the federal mandate on that. What, it wasn't a mandate. There was a mandate with Obamacare, but the states, they had the decision on their own to go and expand Medicaid, and North Carolina was not one of them. And we're going to talk about the legislature there. We'll talk about right to work. Right to work was passed in North Carolina back in 1947. There's been an effort to enshrine it in the Constitution, but that has not happened because of people like Herb. So we'll talk about the history of unions there and what we need to do to expand the union presence in North Carolina. James Lingley will be joining us later in the show, and he comes to us from the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. Another right-to-work state is Florida. He is a 20-year member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, currently the chief steward in their bargaining unit, and he is president of the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. We'll talk about legislative priorities. Under some legislation, the state of Florida would no longer collect dues for a long list of public employee unions. We'll touch on that. Talk about the division within the working class because of politics. Boy, that's ugly. And also voting. You know, last week, a federal judge found Florida's voting law unconstitutional. And that's a case that was brought to the court by the Florida Alliance for Retired Americans. And this is just similar to many of the voter suppression laws that have passed in various states since 2020. So lots to talk about with our two guests on the show today. The big news, Amazon is going union, at least in New York. Amazon workers at a warehouse in Staten Island, New York, have voted to unionize, which is a first for Amazon and a stunning win for a grassroots campaign led by former and current Amazon employees. No national union was involved in this. That's a story in itself, and we're going to talk about that more in the next coming shows here, this week and next week. The vote was 2,654 for the union and 2,131 against. So they won it by over 500 votes. 8,000 people were eligible to vote. The workers who pick and package items for customer orders at the facility will be represented by the Amazon Labor Union, an upstart group formed by Christian Smalls after he was fired from Amazon 2 years ago. At the time, a supervisor at the fulfillment center, Christian staged a walkout over the lack of worker protections against the coronavirus. Amazon says Smalls violated safety protocols by showing up after he had been told to quarantine, so they fired him. Shortly after being fired, he formed the Amazon Labor Union, relying on GoFundMe to finance the operation. Now, again, this union is not affiliated with any national union, leading many to wonder early whether it would gather enough employee signatures to petition for a vote. Indeed, a first attempt failed, but Smalls persevered, eventually meeting the 30% threshold necessary to hold a vote. Amazon mounted a very robust anti-union campaign. Inside the warehouse, management hung Vote No banners, held mandatory meetings at which workers were urged to reject the union, which it referred to as a third party. The company has maintained that it prefers to work directly with its employees to make Amazon a great place to work. You don't need a union. Earlier this year, several union organizers, including Smalls, were arrested for trespassing as they delivered food and union materials to the Amazon parking lot. And on Friday, Amazon issued a brief statement expressing disappointment in the outcome. The company said it was evaluating its options and may file objections based on activities they witnessed in the election. Organizers have been calling for higher wages, longer breaks, paid sick leave, paid time off for injuries sustained on the job, among other demands. In Staten Island, wages start at $18.25 an hour, which is higher than many of the competitors. But Smalls has argued that in New York, that kind of wage is not high enough. He said most of these workers do have a second job or they get government assistance. We need to raise the bar higher, especially when you're talking about one of the richest retailers in the world. Boy, he's right about that. So in late April, workers at a second location in Staten Island, a sorting center across the street from the warehouse, will get their chance to vote on whether to join the ALU. Additionally, there are two other warehouses in the complex that Small says are working to organize. The Staten Island warehouse was only the second Amazon facility to hold a union election. The first, a mail ballot held last year at the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, was invalidated by the NLRB after it found that Amazon had improperly interfered in the election by having a mailbox installed in the facility's parking lot. Votes in the do-over election were counted on Thursday, but the results were too close to call. Right now, we've got 993 workers voting no, 875 voting yes, and more than 400 ballots were challenged by one side or the other. So, a hearing will be held in the coming weeks to determine if any of the contested ballots will be opened and counted. By the way, the turnout in the second Bessemer vote, just shy of 39%, which is down from last year's election when just over half of Bessemer workers cast ballots. But the share of voters supporting the union grew in the original election, workers rejected joining the retail, wholesale, and department store union by a more than 2-to-1 margin. Since then, the workforce has experienced large turnover, and organizers say door knocking and other outreach was easier now that the pandemic has eased. So, again, a win in New York, and you know it's going to be challenged, but they're still counting the ballots in Bessemer, Alabama. Good news out of the Labor Department. Unemployment now at 3.6%, and that prompted a comment from Marty Walsh, our Labor Secretary. He said today the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the American economy added 431,000 jobs in the month of March. The unemployment rate, 3.6%, down from 3.8% in February, with almost 8 million jobs added since President Biden took office and unemployment close to pre-pandemic levels. This strong job growth continues to be historic, and it's worker-centric. Marty went on to say the administration's strategy to tackle the pandemic and grow the economy from the bottom up and the middle out has gotten America back to work and brought real wage gains for many of the hardest-pressed families. For example, average weekly earnings for non-supervisory employees in leisure and hospitality businesses grew much faster than price increases over the past year. In addition, labor force participation continued to grow with significant gains among women aged 25 to 54. And those two categories were hit really, really hard with the pandemic. The other good news, manufacturing gained 38,000 jobs in March, according to the figures on Friday. In durable goods industries in particular, saw big growth, adding 22,000 jobs. Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing, said a healthy 38,000 manufacturing jobs were added in March, continuing a good run in which we've gained 389,000 factory jobs over the last 12 months. Scott goes on to say there's good reason to believe this boom can be sustained, showing 808,000 openings in manufacturing in the month of February alone. That's a lot. That's a lot. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, Herb Harton will be joining us on behalf of the Southwest North Carolina Labor Council.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Iron Workers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good wages, good benefits. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go down to North Carolina right now, and joining us on line number one is Herb Harton. Herb's got a real interesting background. He served our country, fought in Vietnam, came back here, and got into the motion picture industry, got involved in IATSE Local 600, and he's wearing a lot of hats today. Herb, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us, and thank you for serving our country. Let's start right there.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to always be in a room with the union members and, you know, particularly supporting union ideals.
Talk to me about your transition. You come back. Boy, that was a tumultuous time in American history. I mean, we're talking late 60s, LBJ president, the war escalating. You come back. Apparently, you picked up some skills, photography skills, and that led you to the motion picture industry. And I understand, like, you were the first person to join the union down there. Let's go back to that time. Talk to me about that, Herb.
So I left to go to Vietnam as a mama's boy, and I came home drastically changed, as you can imagine, from the horrors and rigors of being in a combat zone. My parents noticed I had changed, but in early 1970, I moved to Charlotte, and I began attending a community college and working freelance in the motion picture industry. And I did that for 12 years before one day I had moved to Wilmington, and I was working on a camera truck loading mags when the director of what was then Local 644 walked onto the truck. We'd been told that he was going to come and threatened not to do anything with him. So I was the first person to sign up in North Carolina to be a union member, and I broke the glass ceiling. I'm proud to say that I'm the person who helped initiate that. And now most all of the members in North Carolina, everybody that's anybody wants to be in the union and have the union. And I can tell you from being out of the union and in the union, I've been in the union now for 33 years and worked out of the union for 2 years. Joining the union was like marrying my wife was the first best thing I ever did, but joining the union easily is the second best decision I ever made.
So, Herb, fast forward to today, you're still a card-carrying member of Local 600. That would be IATSE, Local 600's International Cinematographers Guild. But you got a lot of other hats. Why don't you just run down all the things that you're involved with in North Carolina?
Well, in the Local 600, I am still I continue to serve as the North Carolina State Regional Steward. I serve as the North Carolina State political director, and I'm a member of their six-member presidentially appointed election committee, which we're doing a union election even as we speak here. I'm also president of the Southeastern North Carolina Central Labor Council, which is 11 union affiliates in 5 Southeastern North Carolina counties. I'm also state president of the North Carolina Democratic Party Labor Caucus, and I'm a board member of the North Carolina Alliance of Retired Americans, that are 60,000 retired union members in North Carolina. And I'm a newly elected treasurer to the New Hanover County chapter of the A. Philip Randolph Institute, and finally continue as a Silver Life member of the New Hanover County chapter of the NAACP.
My gosh. Do you have any time to sleep doing all those different jobs? My gosh.
My wife says no. So essentially, I live, eat, and breathe union and working people and issues every day, all the time.
Herb, if you don't mind, let's get into what you've been able to change down there in North Carolina. And I was reading earlier about the North Carolina Democratic Party Labor Caucus. Apparently, when you took that role over, it was barely functioning. So you started a recruiting drive, got some messaging out there, and now it's a whole different ball game. Can you talk to me about what you were able to accomplish? Because you're dealing with what you call not friendly union territory. I know there's some bright spots down there, but it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of vision. Let's get into that. Can you give me some details on how you were able to accomplish that?
You're absolutely right. North Carolina's ground zero for anti-union legislation and policy. One of the 6 southern states that wear that a moniker of right to work, which is actually a right not to have organized labor support you in any fashion, you know. And so I took over the labor caucus when it was on, it was still up and on the books, but it wasn't really doing anything. And for all of my groups, you know, trying to stir them to engagement, we need people to understand the wonderful history that we have of union history, that unions are what built this country from 1947 on. You know, we brought this country out of the Great Depression and made it into the world's superpower, the world's greatest superpower. That was unions and union jobs and a union economy that did that to make America the greatest superpower on the earth. And we've kind of lost that. We've lost the American dream now, where it's been hijacked to an economical system of runaway inequality. And so we're fighting that all the time. And it's a complex issue. And we work to make sure that people understand the issue. And we work to see if we can't get people to engage. The opposition has done such a great job to make politics so visceral and so horrible that people just naturally want to turn their eyes away from it, and we can't do that. We have to get union members to wade back into the breach and understand what's happening to them. Runaway inequality is something that will not correct itself, you know, and you understand it. We were told everything that that it would bubble up and bubble over and come down. It's not. The money has never headed down. It's been gushing up to the people at the top all the time. And we changed the economic structure when we allowed Wall Street to start doing stock buybacks. That has become routine. It used to be considered as a stock manipulation and was against the law, and we need to fix it and make it against the law again.
Herb, if you don't mind, let's get into the messaging here. And you raise a good point, too, because messaging is so important today, and it seems that the conservatives are doing a whole lot better than the liberals on that. And here's a good example. The economy. You know, under Joe Biden, we've got almost 8 million jobs created. The unemployment rate is now at 3.6%. But when you do the polling out there, he's getting low marks. And all we're hearing about is the culture wars, critical race theory, LGBTQ. I mean, it's everything but the economy and what has changed in America. Granted, inflation is higher. I get that. Gas prices are higher. But jobs are being created. Better jobs are being created. What's the problem here, Herb? What's your opinion on that?
Well, the Republicans have done such a great job of disinformation and in creating wedge issues. Messaging is so important. I spend the end of every month writing not one, but two newsletters that go out to our members to keep them involved, keep them, you know, updated on current issues. And we need for union members to know and continually celebrate the real history of organized labor in this country. We need to stop the disinformation that unions cause prices to escalate. We need to tell the world that all unions do not operate under the Jimmy Hoffa mold and that we're not a bunch of communists. We need to let the world know that the U.S. became the greatest superpower on this planet because of the unions in this country and the rise of the middle class and good union wages. And we need to continue our commitment to union families, working Americans, and issues that support reestablishing the American dream.
Now, you're doing that, I take it, in North Carolina. Is that something, are we talking about a national campaign here that's lacking on what you just told me?
Well, I believe generally it's lacking. I believe there are a lot of unioners that don't understand, you know, the history of how this union became that great superpower and what unions did to change the plight of working Americans, before that. You know, we have one political party that has been an enemy of labor since the day Franklin Roosevelt started the Labor Department. And, you know, here in North Carolina, we have all these laws that keep the AFL-CIO from having any partisan kind of thing to it. But the fact is that Republicans hate labor, have always hated labor. They're an enemy of labor. And so they've done everything they can to marginalize us. We had, when Tom Tillis, our current senator, was Speaker of the House, he and Phil Berger, then members of the North Carolina House, said that they wanted to make North Carolina the least favorite union state in the nation. And by God, they went and did it. They at the time, North Carolina was third in the nation in film production behind California and New York, and they went and cut off the necessary funds for that. And I mean, we gave 3 years later, Georgia said that they got $7 billion worth of work from North Carolina, and we dropped to the bottom of the nation in film production. So we're building back, but we're still operating under a state Republican legislature that is austerity-minded, that is cutting money to the public schools, hoping that it will fail so that they can privatize everything. I mean, they're doing a number of things like that. And, you know, we have to engage our people about what is happening, you know, and the consequences of what is happening.
I hear you, my brother. I got to take a break. Herb Harton joining us on our live line today. He's with the Southeast North Carolina Central Labor Council. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And keep in mind, we are available on at least 6 platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line
and rejoin Herb Harton. And Herb is with the Southeastern North Carolina Central Labor Council. He is also head of the North Carolina Democratic Party Labor Caucus. We're talking about the history of unions, union density, the need for unions to be loud and proud. And I want to touch on runaway inequality. And Herb, you mentioned that earlier, and apparently you have done some extensive work on this. Can you share that part with our listeners?
I'd be happy to. There are two huge problems that we have to solve. The first one is the voting rights. If we don't reestablish voting rights, we lose everything. And the other one, as you mentioned, is the problem of runaway inequality. And runaway inequality is where the American dream has been morphed into a system that perpetually feeds the financial elites at the top, where Wall Street routinely operates on a system of stock buybacks that used to be outlawed as stock manipulation. And we've gone from a progressive tax system that taxes the wealthiest Americans because they can afford it to a regressive tax system where most of the tax burden is being placed on those at the bottom, and individuals and corporations at the top are able to completely disregard any financial responsibility to the tax system and to the country, leaving the bottom members to bear the burden on this. My organization, several years ago, I read this book by Les Leopold called Runaway Inequality, and I've read other books by Krugman and Robert Reich and Thomas Piketty and others, but the book by Les Leopold, Runaway Inequality, is the most succinct book on this. That it set my hair on fire. The day I finished it, I chased down Les Leopold in New York and told him I wanted to be one of his trainers for his program and everything. And so I become a trainer for the program, and we push it. We just currently the Labor Caucus just recently acquired a thousand. Copies of this book that we're handing out to people. You know, it is just a magnificent thing on how we've managed to turn to kill the American dream and turn our system into something where there is no trickle down. Money's gushing up to people at the top, you know.
Yeah, there was a time in America where a CEO would make about maybe 20, 25 times that of the average worker in his or her plant, factory, however you want to phrase it. Today, it's like 300-1. And a lot of that, as you pointed out, has to do with Wall Street. Right to work.
I think it's even higher. My figures are that it used to be about 45 to 47. Now it's gone to almost 800 times what they used to make, you know. And recently I went and helped Duke Energy down here. Is I grew up in Western North Carolina, where Duke Power at the time was the monopoly electrical provider. They've since buying out the Eastern North Carolina group. They've become the world's largest producer of electricity, and they did this. They were doing it with coal-fired plants that produced coal ash. And so down here where I live on the Cape Fear River, they got caught dumping coal ash into the river. Well, they came back and they wanted a 15% rate hike. And I went down to this hearing that they were having at the courthouse and got up and I said, you know, Duke Power is saying that they're this poor company, that they can't afford to clean up a mess that they made. They forgot to tell you that they just did a $260 billion stock buyback. They could sell one-tenth of that stock and pay off all of this coal ash problem and give everybody a rebate. And it was the first time in history that they were denied the chance to rebate, you know, and they were looking to get a 7% rebate by asking for a 15% rate increase.
Herb, if you don't mind, I want to switch gears here and talk about right to work, North Carolina, right to work state going back to 1947. And I'm reading that a couple of lawmakers down there are trying to enshrine that in your Constitution. I think they're trying to do that in Tennessee as well. Where are we with that? Are they successful, or people like you saying, hey, we can't do that kind of thing, I would assume,
they're
right?
Still trying to do it, and we're still fighting them on it. And, of course, we're still pushing for the PRO Act that would, just eviscerate their attempts to keep it going and bring it into other states.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because the Build Back Better bill had some good components of the PRO Act, and that seems to be a dead issue right now. One more topic I want to get into, and that's lowering prescription drug prices and expanding Medicaid. Now, your state did not expand Medicaid, and I was reading that earlier, and is there any chance that may happen? I know you got a very conservative legislature there, but what's the story?
Well, as you said, we have an austerity-minded legislature that turned it down, which makes no sense, none. I a couple of weeks ago, went to Fayetteville and delivered a speech in this field out from a bridge where 75 people are living in the dead of winter under a bridge in tents. And we're talking about families with children. The only thing they have for them out there is a horrible-looking porta-potty. They don't give them anything to put their trash in so it blows around and stuff. I went as part of the North Carolina Alliance of Retired Americans, and our goals, the things that we've really been working on, are lowering prescription drug prices and expanding Medicaid to the 600,000 people in North Carolina who go without coverage. Making them do so, to me, is political murder. People die because they don't have medical coverage. It's also a really stupid economical thing to do because it deprives North Carolina of millions of dollars that would go in, that would go into the North Carolina economy. As a result of this, several rural hospitals have had to actually close their doors, which means that now you'll drive 60 to 70 miles instead of 30 if you have a heart attack, and your chance of dying raises from that. Again, political murder, and it's money that's we've already been taxed and paid for, and so it's a really inhuman, unmoral thing that the state Republican legislature has done to the citizens of North Carolina.
Very sad. And a lot of states have done the same thing. All right, Herb, we're going to have to leave it on that note. Herb Harton joining us on our live line. He's president of the Southeastern North Carolina Central Labor Council, also president of the North Carolina Democratic Party Labor Caucus. Very active individual, very outspoken. I want to drive you to the website, those of you listening, ncdplaborcaucus.org. ncdplaborcaucus.org is a website to go to. Herb, you're a fighter. Thank you again for serving our country back in Vietnam and all the different organizations that you're involved with. Let's stay in touch on all of these issues down the road. How's that sound?
It's been my pleasure to be here.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we have a change in the lineup of guests today. Jim Lingley, on behalf of the Northwest Florida Federation, will not be joining us. Instead, we're going to go up to Washington State and join Scott Herrick. Scott is co-founder of Unionly, and this is a company that allows unions to set up their own dues deduction system, which he says will ultimately save them. Scott Herrick coming up next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes Liuna to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Seattle, Washington right now. Joining us on our live line is Scott Herrick. Scott is the co-founder of Unionly. Website is unionly.io. That's an interesting website. Unionly.io. He's going to explain what this company is all about. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about his background and how he worked his way to become the co-founder of Unionly. Scott Herrick, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. You know, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's over about 50 degrees in Seattle, so life's good, you know. How's life treating you?
Good, good. Good to hear. Yeah, you got some interesting weather over there, Pacific Northwest. Were you part of that crazy heat wave? What was like about a year ago when it was like 90 to 100 degrees?
Yeah, it was this past summer. I know it feels like a year ago or a couple of weeks, hard to say, but it was this past summer, and I think it got to 109 or 110, and my significant other had the foresight to get a hotel room. She said, hey, this is going to get crazy because no one here has AC. And she said, hey, we need to get a hotel room before they all get booked up. So we did. And sure enough, that next day, you know, even the cheapest hotels were going for $500-$600 because the entire city tried to find a hotel room at once because it was like 110. Yeah, streets are melting, you know, pulled. It was wild, but yeah, keep showing your toes.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, I know. We talked a lot about that on the show. I know farm workers are dying in the field over in Oregon and parts of your state as well. Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. The blueberries were cooking on the field. That's how hot it was.
Oh, yeah. No, it was wild. But, yeah, it's a good place to be, you know.
All right, talk to me about, well, your background's kind of interesting. You were in a company called Avo, or is it Avo, digital advertising, and that kind of led you to Unionly. Talk to me about that path, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. I kind of go one step real quick before that even. So I graduated college in 2008, you know, which was arguably or just different of a worse time to go look for a job than, you know, through the pandemic. There was just no one hiring and nothing was really going on. So graduated then and went to work at a company called Big Fish Games doing customer support, which was pretty cool. After that, then I moved into a house with a group of friends, and they started selling digital advertising at Avo. And he started coming home and with stacks of paper, and they were taking orders and got bigger and bigger. And I said, hey, what are you doing, man? And he told me, got on board. Fortunately, they were nice enough to hire me then. There was about 30 people in the company. Fast forward over the course of 7 years later, as part of the company and group that helped lead the team to grow, or the overall company, to see that growth through 30 people to about 500. as part of a team that oversaw about 20,000 clients across the country. So I learned a lot from that, just seeing that whole experience of going from 30 to 500 people, and it was pretty incredible.
Sounds good. You were obviously managing it well, and you moved on and became the co-founder of Unionly. Now, in a nutshell, Unionly allows unions to set up their own dues reduction system. Explain to me, Scott, how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, started looking into this whole, industry and learning about the space about 6 years ago when I met the owner of a company called Union Active, Unions America, and he said, hey, we need this kind of technology. There's really nothing in the space. So I started looking into it. And, there's on the fundraising side, which we help with as well, on the merchandise side, we help out with as well, on the dues side as well. So we could have in-depth conversations about all of it. I mean, the fundraising side, everybody goes to GoFundMe, if there's a, fallen officer or injured member or somebody wants to rally around it. But the amount of fraud that happens with those kinds of campaigns is disturbing. And that's a big part of why I wanted to get into this, was to help prevent that, because we work with a lot of, individual, FOP, fraternal or police lodges, or, IBW locals or just union locals, to actually guarantee that the funds raised go to them. On the due side of things, or just the transactions in general, there really isn't anything I saw in this space that's built specifically for organized labor, right? People say, oh, there's PayPal, there's Venmo, which is actually the same thing. PayPal owns Venmo. They don't care, right? And that's, one, it's meant for individuals, not businesses. And two, they're not concerned about the well-being of organized labor unions in general. And so I said, hey, we need to get into this space. And basically we built a platform that is extremely easy to use. It takes like the 10 or 15 pieces you need to set up an online payment network, put them into one platform. It takes about 10 minutes to set up, and it can be completely free to the organization.
So how are you making money on this then, Scott?
Very, very carefully. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a small platform fee on each transaction, but it really is a trust play. This technology, we could charge a lot more than we are for, but really it's trying to put our money where our mouth is and show that we want to actually support the labor movement and support the workforce that drives our country. And, by saying, hey, here, this is what we put out. And on each transaction, there's a small platform fee to help cover our costs, but that's about it.
So how many unions have signed up to do this so far?
We're getting close to about 500.
500 unions? Really?
Yeah. So, there's several thousand more to go.
That's pretty good. In what time period are we talking about when you started this, started Unionly to today to get those 500?
It were almost April 20th, 2020, which is a funny accident, So 4/20, 2020 was our founding date. so then that's what I could kind of tell the backstory of. It's a concept that I've been working on for about 6 years. And then at my prior company, I was pitching it and trying to get it going. The powers that be at the time did not like it because it was not their idea, I guess I'll go ahead and say. And then, March 2020 hits, and the prior company of that was acquired. Everyone let go, all that. And then I called the owner of Union Active and said, hey, if we do this on our own, is this still something you want to do? He said, absolutely. So we got to work. So, while we've, officially April 20th of 2022 will be our two-year anniversary, it's a concept that's been about 6 years in the making. So, in short, to answer your question, in about 2 years.
That's pretty good. I mean, when a big chunk of the country is shutting down, you're starting off on this new business, and it's taken off to the point that you have 500 unions signed up. That is so cool. You're getting a good response from the unions on this? What are they saying?
I mean, it's taking a little bit of time, and I think ultimately anything in life and business in general rolls up to trust, right? If you don't have trust, what do you have, And to me, right. When we first started calling out, I'm calling people, emailing people, and they're like, who the hell is this guy? Which is completely fair, right? And like, why should he trust me? But I think as we've gone on and as we've, built rapport and built trust, it's kind of picked up, because that's really, I definitely put trust above all else, and especially in this space where it's like, hey, and I think that's one of the things that has kept unions strong over the many decades, but it's one thing that, especially over the last few, has kind of kept technology out, is that inclusiveness and being insular, which is great on a lot of levels, but being distrusting of you know, outside business or technology in general has really kind of created this gap that I've kind of helped to bridge and saying, hey, look, let me, you know, talk is cheap. Let me put my money where my mouth is and show you. So I think as we've shown it and as we've proved and built that trust, it's really picked up steam. And we really do want to help as many people as possible and support organized labor as much as possible. I mean, especially looking at, you know, the website and listening to the you know, union busting across the nation episode you had, and it is pretty wild, right? And I think a big piece of that is the trying to take away payroll deduction of dues, and that's always been such a, you know, sticking point. And to me, and I think when anyone hears is, oh, you should stop payroll deduction, they just see red and hear bad. To me, it's more about, hey, you should take that control back from the company. Why give that control to the company? Oh, it's, people say, oh, it's easy just to have it done. It's like, sure, but if you're giving the company that power to screw over an entire union and that's their main tactic, why not take mm-hmm. that piece of control away from them, right? So it's not saying, hey, just you should just stop that because there wasn't an alternative to replacing it. That's where we've worked with a bunch of different unions, which has been, you know, unfortunate to see that they're in that spot where they, you know, are being, you know, suffering from union busting tactics, but then we can step in and basically help set up a dues payment system to replace that within 24 hours, you know? So to me, that's kind of the conversation that I hope to have with more people is if possible, you know, why give that control to the companies and actually set up your own system. That's what we've set up to give unions the, you know, ability and empower them to set up their own dues payment system to really just kind of take control of their, you know, financial existence.
Well, it makes sense. You know, companies, that, well, first of all, so many of them don't want to go union. But if they vote in the union, the workers at those respective companies, let's just let the union take the dues out. And one less thing that the company has to do. Now, I'm reading mm-hmm. that the retail workers, retail and warehouse union, they're not doing this right now. Are you working with them at this time, Scott?
We are not with that particular in any locals within that international, but you have been following the Starbucks Workers United movement, which, you know, kind of is part of that, or but not the Amazon push or anything along those lines. So, you know, hopefully we can as all that kind of builds up, but at present we are not.
I gotcha. Okay, so if I go to your website, unionlee.io, which I think is kind of interesting. Usually it's an .org or a .com or a .gov. But this is .io, unionlee.io. You can guide any union listening right now on how to sign up with Unionlee. Is that the case?
That is the case, 100%. You can also call me on my cell phone at 206-595-8631. You know, I'm part of a big family. I was raised by a lot of people and, you know, happy to put my number out there and say, call me directly. You know,
there you go.
Yeah, you can go to the website and call me. And like I said, talk is cheap, you know, so happy to work with anybody and do what we can to prove it, you know.
Well, there's not too many people to give out their cell numbers, but I'm going to repeat that if you don't mind. It's 206-595-8631. Scott Herrick is the co-founder of Unionlee, and it allows unions to set up their own dues deduction system. And a lot of them are, well, 500 of them. Do you have a goal in mind here? Where do you want to be at the end of this year?
At least, I'd hopefully double that. You know, I mean, really, it's the goal is to help as many people as possible and as many locals as possible to support the labor movement because, you know, I think especially during these times when, you know, technology is amazing and in doing a lot of things, you know, as the large massive tech companies kind of start to, you know, continue to shift the balance of power, it's important to remember that, hey, you know, people and unions need to stay strong and be supported as well. So I'd say, yeah, at least double.
All right. Scott Herrick, again, co-founder of Unionlee. You can get more information and sign up at unionlee.io, unionlee.io. Scott Herrick, thanks for checking in with us, and let's check in with you later on and see how we're doing with the company. How's that sound?
Sounds like a great plan to me. I appreciate you having me on, and hope you have a great day.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, we have the Ohio and the Maine AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.